Welcome to Book Notes, Ohio Channel's conversation show where we look at Ohio authors and books about Ohio. He's a nonfiction author, award-winning journalist, and Pulitzer Prize finalist. Columbus native Will Haygood may be best known for his 2008 Washington Post article that served as a basis for Lee Daniels' film, The Butler. His newest book, Showdown, delves into the Supreme Court nomination of Thurgood Marshall. It has been named one of the five books to read this fall by CBS Sunday Morning News. And thank you, Will Haygood, for joining us today. So, Thurgood Marshall, a Supreme Court justice, and you wrote a book on the confirmation hearings. There's probably been, 19, 20 books written about Thurgood? Why did you want to revisit this subject?
Well, none of those books covered his confirmation hearings in any detail at all. And so my focus was very much on the Supreme Court confirmation hearings because it was an epic battle. Every other Supreme Court nominee before Thurgood Marshall, their hearings lasted less than 4 hours. Marshall's hearings lasted 5 days over a period of 13 days. So there was a lot of stop and start, and the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, the very powerful members of that were Southern Senators, Strom Thurmond of South Carolina, James Eastland of Mississippi, Sam Ervin of North Carolina, and John McClellan of Arkansas. These were the very senators whose states Thurgood Marshall had upended with his Supreme Court rulings in the 40s and 50s. So as history turned, there would come a day when Thurgood Marshall would be staring down his fierce critics, and they would be staring down the man who had changed the landscape of the South. So I just thought all that drama deserved a book.
It is very dramatic. I gotta admit, when I'm thinking about a book about confirmation hearings, I'm like, how exactly is this gonna be a page turner?
Yeah.
But the way you kind of crafted the narrative, and I'm wondering, going into the research, it took you about 4 years to five years to put this book together. Mm-hmm. It was, you would have day one, but then you would take us kind of a pathway through our very sad racial history.
Right.
And then you do day two. So you're weaving us in and out of that. How did you come up with that technique? Were you planning on doing that when you were first writing, or did that kind of happen after you got all of your research material?
Many people come to a book about a judge or a lawyer, and they might think it's going to be dull. And I knew that there was enough drama in Thurgood Marshall's life for several books. So I just went to visit room 2228 where the hearings were held. And I said to myself, goodness, it's 5 days. I should write it just as it happened. Day one on this date. And then if he was grilled particularly harshly by Senator Ervin on day one, I would take the reader to Sam Ervin's hometown in North Carolina and explain to you how Sam Ervin came to his views. Or then day three, when he was grilled by James Eastland, I would take you back to the Eastland plantation. Now, the Senate Judiciary Committee had two men whose fathers had murdered men. Strom Thurmond's father had murdered a man, and James Eastland's father had murdered two men. I mean, actually a man and a woman. How often will you get that dynamic? Now, not trying to link the Thurmond son or the Eastland son to those murders, but I think it was important to tell that story to show that these sons grew up in households where violence had been practiced. And, what did that pour into their psyche? There would come this amazing day when President Johnson nominated Thurgood Marshall, and it was like the last gasp of the Civil War. President Lyndon Johnson said the first nail was the 1964 Civil Rights Bill, the first nail. Second nail, 65 Voting Rights Act. And he said, the third nail in the coffin of white supremacy is going to be me naming a gifted, accomplished African-American to the Supreme Court. And that was Thurgood Marshall.
The book is a testament to cowardice and courage. And so much of American history is based on a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It's not based necessarily on truth.
Right.
And I think that LBJ's narrative with the Vietnam War kind of maybe overshadows really what he did for civil rights and actually the kind of mechanistic effort it took to get the Marshall appointment approved.
Right. Yes. That was stunning to me, just the fact that LBJ maneuvered another justice, Tom Clark, off the court because there was no vacancy in 1967. Tom Clark from Texas knew LBJ well, and LBJ knew him well, and LBJ was a master politician, and he told Tom Clark, hey, I want to appoint your son, Ramsey Clark, my attorney general, but I can't do that with you on the Supreme Court because people will accuse me of nepotism. So Tom Clark, so that his son could get a job, stepped down. That created the vacancy, and the Southern senators, in Marshall's mind in the 40s and 50s, had been public enemy number one. One of the Southern senators' children told me that when they were young and they would get in trouble in the South, their parents would tell them, if you continue to be bad, Thurgood Marshall is going to come and get you. And so Marshall became this mythic boogeyman, and here he had won these cases for the betterment of the country. On its editorial page on March 6, 2011, the New York Times penned an editorial simply titled Thurgood Marshall. It was unusual on that page to have a life revisited after the passage of so much time. It was a lovely and tender tribute about the ongoing artistic homage being paid to Marshall's life. On the Supreme Court today, the editorial stated, there is no justice who seems similarly placed there to speak for the powerless by such a sweeping tide of history. There is no one whose life translates so magisterially into art. All of the attention gained Marshall new admirers. Tourists would troop out to Arlington National Cemetery to visit his gravesite. The cemetery sat on land once owned by a prominent Confederate family. After the Civil War and the South's defeat, the land would be sold to the federal government. Old and bent and jubilee singing Negroes, fresh from the slave plantations, would trudge into Washington without places to stay, hoping their government would help them. Many who were penniless were reduced to foraging for food. They were often given housing on the site of the cemetery itself, a part of which was called Freedmen's Village. These were the very people whom Secretary of War Edwin Stanton had appealed to for help during the massive manhunt to bring President Lincoln's assassin to justice. And when the final gust of breath had left the former plantation residents, they would be placed in spare wooden coffins and lowered into the earth on the same grounds where Thurgood Marshall, who had worked to free their descendants, would be laid to rest years later, allowing the wind to blow eternally over their gathered souls.
Let's talk a little bit about how you got into the written word. You're born in Columbus.
Yep.
You like basketball.
Yeah.
Doing the stuff in school. Then you go out to New York wanting to be an actor.
Yep.
So you tried that for a while?
Flopped at that. No, just total flop.
So how did you go from that then to writing?
Well, I, in New York, applied for the executive training program at Macy's Department Store, got accepted. So I was in the retail for about a year and a half, got fired from that job, wasn't very good at it. And the store manager, Janet Moran, said, this is not your calling. There's something else is your calling. I said, no. I can't lose my job. I'll work harder. I'll outdo Saks Fifth Avenue and Lord & Taylor and all the other stores. No. I'm getting ready to focus. She said, but you're always in the stock room reading books. And so she handed me a tablet. A tablet. In this age, I better sort of clarify that. It was paper. A notebook tablet. And said, take this home and write down what you really want to do in life. I said, I know what I want to do, Janet. I want to change the look of Macy's. And she said, no, you don't.
Huh.
So I wrote something about missing my hometown and about my little niece who had just been born. It was just a stream of consciousness. And I handed it to her the next morning at work, and she looked at it and flipped the pages and continued reading, and she said, whatever you do in life, you must go and become a writer. I mean, it's just mystical how that happened. She came to my reading in New York City 2 weeks ago, sat in the front row. She gave me 3 weeks before my final paycheck. My final paycheck, I went to pick it up, and I was walking past the New York Public Library. I went in and I read a newspaper article about Ned Chilton, who was the publisher of the Charleston, West Virginia Gazette newspaper. And he had just won the Elijah Lovejoy Award for crusading journalism. And I said to myself, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write this man, tell him I've been fired, tell him I want a job. He'll hire me, and I'll go to West Virginia and I'll start working. And literally, that's what I did. They got in touch with me. They didn't have an opening for a writer, but they had an opening as a copy editor, editing the reporter's stories. On the weekend, I would go around town and find stories and get them published. And stories got published, and then I got hired by the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and then the Boston Globe, and I was off and running.
When you're trying to pick book topics, what is it that makes you, what draws you into a subject?
My books generally take, 5 to 6 years. The Sammy Davis Jr. book took 6 years. Sugar Ray Robinson took 4.5. Thurgood Marshall book took 5 years. I always say to myself mentally, I have to be able to walk up my steps of my home, turn the key, and be happy for 5 years with that person sitting on the couch waiting on me. Mm-hmm. And so my subjects come down to, will they be good company with me? And they're people who I would love to hang out with. Sammy Davis, I remember when I was thinking about doing the Sammy Davis book, there were two subjects who I was weighing, New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller in one hand and Sammy Davis Jr. in the other. And I said to myself, wow, who do I want to turn the key in my home with and hang out with the rest of the evening? Nelson Rockefeller or Sammy Davis Jr.? And it just became a no-brainer.
So you grew up in Columbus, you went to school at Miami U over in Oxford. Do you think that there is an essence of an Ohioan, or is there part of an essence of you being brought up in Ohio that makes you this kind of person?
Yeah, I don't adhere to that sort of stereotype about Southerners being one way and Westerners being another way and Midwesterners being another way. But I do believe this, very important for me to live in a place with seasons, with fall, winter, summer, and spring. And the seasons always play a big role in my book. And I think because the seasons, the winters here can especially be challenging. And yet I had great jubilation as a kid outside in the winters. And I've always loved the sound of the leaves underfoot in the fall. And I've always loved going up on the banks of the Scioto River with my family to picnic. And somehow in the ravines of those seasons, I would always be dreaming, well, when the winter comes, I'm going to do this. Or when the spring comes, and I'm going to do this. Or when the summer ends, I'm going to do this, or when the fall comes. And so it's, you know, I'm very grateful that I grew up in a place that had seasons, because in some spiritual sense, my clock, my artistic clock, seemed to be very connected to the seasons.
Well, thank you. This time has just flown by. We do have a series of questions we like to ask all of our writers here. We call it a speed round, although it's really not really that speedy. I have some four quick questions here.
Okay.
First question is pen, pencil, or computer?
Pen.
So you're a longhand kind of guy.
Yeah, I tend to write out a lot of my outlines in pen so I can see it on the long legal pad, and I have stacks of legal pad. And also, when I interview people, I always use pen.
Huh? Do you have a particular pen that you like?
No, but that's interesting. As I've been on this book tour, I got a gift from the President of the United States for the butler. He gave me one of his presidential ink pens. He actually gave it to a staff member who gave it to me, and this is it right here. This is a Barack Obama presidential pen. And I use it in certain cities to sign books. So
that is cool. Yeah, you don't want to leave that behind.
Yeah, no, I don't. No, I don't. It came in a beautiful blue leather case, too. Gorgeous.
That's cool. And you probably have already answered this, but where's your favorite place to write? Where's the favorite place you like to write in your house?
I have a study. With a big, gigantic desk, you know, and bookshelves and things on the wall. So that's where I write.
Cool. The final question is, what would you say to the young Will Haygood? If you go back in time, what would you say to your younger self?
Don't give up. And a lot of times my back was up against the wall, being fired at Macy's, you know. Don't give up. So I didn't give up.
Well, thank you very much. Will Haygood, thank you for joining us. His book out right now is Showdown. And it was just mentioned on CBS in the morning show that one of the top five books to read this fall. I'd like to thank you for your time, and I'm looking forward to your next book.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.